Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. When an intel squadron meets an escort squadron, an escort made heavy doesn't stop your fighters from making attack runs on ships. But if you choose to attack squadrons, you still have to attack the escort. The best way to defeat escort is careful positioning coupled with brute force. Assume attack coordinates, and may the force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 20th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. We had our regional in Vancouver, Washington a while ago. A crew of us from around the table headed down to play, and a big thank you to Schmitty from the FFG forums for running it. The big winner was Tyrion from the forums, who went three rounds with a whopping 30 points. I never had the opportunity to face him myself, but my buddy Josh gave him a run for his money in the first round with his tag Rhymer Ball list, but obviously fell a bit short. Tyrion's list was a high-activation Dodonna list, with an MC-30 straight out of Worlds, and Yavaris, amongst others. Speaking of Worlds and Josh, I tested out my list against Josh's Rhymer Ball to get experience against that list, and from the moment that final match began at Worlds, I knew who the winner was because of that testing. Don't go head-on into a bomber wing, folks. Go around it, slow roll towards it, anything to let your own squadrons do their work to scatter it or whittle it down before you move in. Anyone who doesn't think that games can be won or lost in deployment, I point you to that one. And of course, always have an answer to the squadron game. As for my regionals experience, I took a list that was either go big or go home, and it went home. I flew Medin with an MC-80 Defiance, MC-80 Mon Caren, a Bomber Command Transport, 4 X-Wings, 2 A-Wings, and Jan Ors. My first match was against the list I didn't want to face, a 3ISD-1, no squadron, Mahdi list, where each was kitted out with quad turbo lasers and point defense to handle squadrons. I wasn't afraid of the firepower of the list, since I could easily get around them with Medin, but pulling down enough of his list to get a sizable win, that was my concern. And I was right, as I was only able to drag down one of his ships, while he got all but one of my squadrons. It resulted in a 6-5 win for me, which I knew hurt my chances right away. My second round was against a Tarkin ISD Raider Gazanti Rhymer Ball list, where she was able to get her ISD out of the front arc of the Mon Caren at a crucial moment, which resulted in a very close 4-7 loss for me. Lesson learned from that one, don't try for double arcs with the Liberty. Make sure you're going to have them in your front no matter what. Securing that front arc shot would have torn down the ISD and flipped the game around. My final third game was against a Riken Yavaris Admonition CR-90B Slicer Tool Transport Bomber Command Transport Rebel Aces list, and the story of that game was just bad luck. I don't think I could have flown that game any better. My Mon Caren exploded out to flank him at speed 3, getting the side of Yavaris and threatening his Riken Corvette, which surprised him with Maydean's maneuverability. My fighters swarmed the outskirts of his fighter wing, the A's ganging up on individual aces, and the X's made bombing runs against Yavaris. Unfortunately, my rolls consistently came up one short of killing things. Yavaris hung on by one in round 3, allowing it another activation that gave double taps out, which killed off my squadrons, and his Riken Corvette held on by one in round 4, allowing it to bump my Defiance in the following round, and keeping it from escaping the admonition following behind it. I couldn't pull a structural damage for love or money, and the first crit done to Defiance was the half-engineering one, and the first done to Mon Caren was the only attack one ship per activation one. His dice were hot, with bomber hit crits falling so often he barely used any rerolls. It ended up being a 3-8 loss after my Defiance went down. Disappointing, but sometimes it just doesn't go your way. Another big takeaway. Skilled first officer is the best single point you can spend on a ship, even if you have Leia in your list like I did. I had a point to spare and didn't put it on my Defiance, and regretted it in my 2 losses. It's going to be an auto-include on 3 command ships for me, unless I have other plans for the officer slot going forward. There's another regional in February up in Vancouver, BC that I'm more excited about, mostly because I'm super excited about the Phoenix home, and it'll be out by then. And congrats to Brandon, the third member of our Around the Table crew who took second at the regional. Now, we're going to finish things off for the objectives. And first up is Dangerous Territory. Dangerous Territory, or as I like to call it, sure, take damage for points, my opponent. Seems like a pretty straightforward objective, but it has a couple of tricks to it. When should you put it in your list? If you don't move fast enough for intel sweep, you don't have the maneuverability or bombers for superior positions, and you just don't feel like minefields, this is a solid choice. There's nothing flashy about it, and it gives you immunity to obstacles, which is pretty cool. It is really the back-down choice for objectives, as it doesn't work much better or worse with any particular list. The only thing it might do, depending on obstacle placement, is mess with a longer-ranged fleet, but again, that can be mitigated with deployment and placement. How should you use it? There's 2 ways that I use this one. First, you can just place obstacles normally to try to give you an advantage and your opponent a disadvantage, making the points a nice side bonus. If you do it this way, and have a ship to spare, you can run it all over grabbing tokens while your own ships just bully their way over other obstacles without a care in the world. It certainly makes maneuvering a bit less of a hassle. That's the easy way. The way I like to use it is to cluster a bunch of them together and deploy on that side of the play area. This way, I tempt my opponent with the points for damaged trade, while I just chug right in. They either avoid the obstacles and screw up their attack plan, or go through them and suffer. There's one big key to this strategy, though. Don't use debris fields for this. If you can, make sure you place most or all of the asteroid fields in that area. Opponents with larger ships won't care too much about taking 2 shields off for 15 VPs, so that's a bad trade. Suffering a face-up is much worse for them, and may keep them from taking the token. When should you choose it from your opponent? This is another one in if the others are really awful for your list. Dangerous Territory isn't much of a game-changer. It doesn't change deployment, it doesn't make ships stronger or more vulnerable, it just makes the second player invulnerable to obstacles. They're still obstructed by them, which I think has more effect on average in the course of a game. The only thing special you have to decide in choosing this objective is how much damage to VP you're comfortable with trading. Debris fields are pretty solid targets if you have bigger ships, and even asteroids can work with a well-timed repair command. Just be wary of landing on an obstacle right before you engage, and/or doing it with a smaller ship. But even then, if you're sure that a raider is unlikely to have their side or rear facing towards an enemy, why not run it over a debris field? Basically, if you're facing down advanced gunnery and contested outpost, and neither of those are good matches for you, take this one. It's the closest thing you'll get to an objectiveless game. Dangerous Territory isn't going to change the game a lot. It's also a bit dull, honestly, but if your fleet is a big slow lug of a thing, it's the best choice for you. Sometimes the best choice is a safe one. Now, let's wrap everything up with superior positions. Superior positions can be the best or worst thing ever, depending on your fleet. It can turn a narrow loss into a huge win, or vice versa. If you've got the right list for it, it guarantees an exciting battle. When should you put it in your list? You need at least one of 2 things before you even consider this objective: high-speed, maneuverable flanking ships, and reliable squadron activations. Without either of these, if you run into an opponent that does have them, they will eat your lunch in this objective. You'll also need a plan for dealing with enemy bomber wings, which we'll talk about in a minute. Since you want to rack up those tokens with rear arc hits, a fast, maneuverable ship is your first key to victory. A Raider, Gladiator, MC-30, anything that can swing around fast and strike from behind. Barring that, or in addition to it, you need squadrons that can reliably activate. This means rogue, or having a dedicated carrier or flotilla. You have to have that in order to get those rear hits, Having a bunch of standard squadrons with no carriers means they're just going to chase enemy ships and not be able to shoot them, Reimer accepted. Finally, you need to have an answer for enemy bomber wings. One of the key reasons for your opponent to choose this objective is that they also have a good chance of getting rear arc squadron attacks. You need to be confident that you can stop them from hitting you at a minimum, and have a very good chance at wiping them out or locking them down such that your own fighters can get through. A good smattering of escorts will help here, as will high-health bruisers like YT-2400s or fire sprays. This is a very solid objective if it favors you, and you may see opponents flee in terror before choosing it, even selecting something equally awful to them like a dual ISD list taking most wanted. Fear of facing it and forcing a bad choice on your opponent is a wonderful thing, so that's another great reason to put it in your list. How do you use it? The first advantage it gives is a huge one. Games can easily be won or lost in deployment, and you get to deploy all of your fleet after they do. They have to guess what you're going to do, and you get the final word. If not for the second part, being able to counter-deploy alone would make this one to take every time. However, that second part throws the wrench in. 15 points every time you do damage targeting the rear arc is a big deal, but you have to actually be able to do it. That's where the items I mentioned previously come in. Playing this means you get to out-deploy your opponent, so take advantage of what vulnerabilities they give you. They might bunch up so that you can't isolate any of their ships. If so, you have an opportunity to put a flanking ship into good position, put the majority of your fleet head-on so that they can't turn to guard their flank without taking heavy fire, and run that flanker around the side. Maybe they spread out a bit and want to rely on their speed to adjust to your deployment. If you've got fast ships yourself, deploy to one side and focus everything on the edge ship, tearing it down fast and then rolling up the rest of their fleet as they turn to engage. Whatever your strengths are, play to them. You're going to get one of the best opportunities to control how the battle unfolds with this mission. Just don't ignore the second half, getting those bonus points. Getting to out-deploy your opponent is great, but if you can't capitalize, or just as importantly, prevent your opponent from capitalizing, you can see a 10-1 tabling turn into an 8-3 on tokens alone. I actually think it's more important to prevent your opponent from scoring than it is to focus on your own. If you deployed right, you should have the advantage there and be able to hit their fleet hard in its softest parts. Then, keep them from using whatever they have to get into your backfield by, well, blowing it up. Engage their bombing wing with your own fighters, you see where their fast flanker is, send your own plus something else to overwhelm it quickly, or burn it quick with the bulk of your fleet. Because you got to deploy last, you have the advantage in how to arrange this fight, so make it a priority. Once you've dealt with their likely scorers, focus on getting your own points ASAP. Of course, there could be a huge mismatch where you've got a lot of squadrons and they've only got a fast ship where you could just mostly ignore theirs and bomb everything all the time, but I wouldn't count on your opponent giving you that kind of matchup. Just one final thing. No matter what your scoring unit is, remember not to send it in piecemeal. As always, work to bring the full weight of your firepower in all at once, so that they have to make hard choices while you're blasting them to bits. With deployment advantage, this really just comes down to knowing your speed and maneuverability with your fleet. When should you choose it from your opponent? Firstly, and most obviously, if you have a good flanker or bomber wing and your opponent doesn't because they put this objective in their list solely because it allows them to deploy second, then absolutely pick this one and rack up some tokens. Other than that, the time to select this is just like above, when you think you have a better shot at scoring than your opponent. Maybe you have a raider to counter their fighters while your demolisher slips behind their ships. Or maybe you're confident that your X-Wings can chew through their squadrons and use intel to launch attacks. Just remember that your opponent gets to out-deploy you. When it comes to deploying, there's so many options because of all the combinations of lists and opponent lists, I can only cover some basics. As I mentioned before, you can deploy everything in a group to cluster up for better defense. Doing this will keep your opponent from isolating your ships and overpowering them, but it also limits the maneuvers you can perform to avoid ramming other ships. you're ceding the ability to set up a good flanking ship to your opponent, who can put flanking ships out to their heart's content. And yes, you can peel a ship off your formation, but it's not going to be able to range out as far as one that started off way to the side. Plus, your strategy is pretty much written on the wall for them to imagine counters to. This may be the deployment for you, such as when you have ships like Nebulons that need protection from flanking attacks, or slower, less maneuverable ships that can't react as quickly. Just be aware of the shortcomings of this strategy. Or, you can just not care, and deploy however your basic strategy requires. Throw that flanking ship out there, break your fleet up, deploy ships sideways. Just know that whatever you do, you're probably going to be outgunned. Anything you split off is vulnerable to getting ganged up on, or it might just get ignored as they focus on the bulk of your fleet. In fact, much like most wanted, throwing a fast, maneuverable ship off to the side like it's going to flank for points isn't the worst plan here. If your opponent goes after it with something to kill it, run away and take those points off the board. If they don't, swing in and flank. Get them to point their noses away from the main fight, so it'll be more difficult to get them turned back towards it as your bait ship rockets away. And maybe they'll even try to double-team your bait ship, and you'll negate that many more points. Bottom line, they're going to out-deploy you, but that doesn't mean they'll know your strategy. Unless you're confident that you can execute a straightforward victory, get sneaky and try to pull the wool over their eyes. And of course, go after those points as hard and as often as you can. Superior positions is an objective that has two major parts, and you can't ignore either of them. It certainly gives a big advantage to the second player, but you'll know you're on your way to being a great Armada player when you can take first player with confidence. After the break, we're going to finish up those rogues with the HWK and the Skurg.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Linwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back. And now let's round up those rogues and start off with the HWK-290. The HWK-290 is the Rebel intel ship, and for that, it is invaluable. But throw counter on top of it, and you have a ship that you won't feel shortchanged for having to take. First, let's look at the stats. 3-speed keeps it up with Rebel bombers. 4-hull isn't great, but it'll probably take a couple of hits to put down. 2 blues against squadrons and a single blue against ships are weak, but that's not why the Hawk is around. Obviously, it has intel, the bread and butter, and then it has counter. Stat-wise, it's almost a carbon copy of the Imperial Jumpmaster, which is the same cost, but with swarm instead of counter, and speed 4 instead of speed 3. While that speed 4 means that it can get to where it's needed easier, and most importantly can keep up with TIE bombers, I would rank the Jumpmaster below the Hawk. The reason is that intel ships are going to be priority targets. Without them, your bombers are locked down as normal, so I'd rather have a counter on them to make them a target you'll have to give some thought to shooting at. Blasting a Jumpmaster with a squadron that only has 2 hull left is a no-brainer. That squadron will keep engaging other fighters and require another opponent activation to finish off. Blasting an HWK with 2 hull is a decision that takes some thought. Are you going to lose engagement with important fighters if it dies? Do you have another squadron ready to jump in? And if you do, will it lose a precious round of shooting because it has to move to fill that gap instead? The HWK forces these decisions into the cost of taking it off the board, where the Jumpmaster does not. Being an intel ship, the Hawk is going to be used in the thick of your bomber wing. Since intel only works on squadrons it's engaged with, you're going to need to keep it towards the front lines to make enemy fighters heavy, and that means escort squadrons are a must for keeping it around. They've only got 2 dice to fire with, but that's just fine because you really want to focus on moving them over shooting. Just like I talked about with the Jumpmaster, you need to think a lot about order of activations with intel ships when moving them. If you're going to be moving squadrons around them to a new position, remember that the Hawk needs to move last. Otherwise, those squadrons you wanted to fly away will suddenly be locked down. And if you're wanting to free up squadrons at another location, the Hawk should be moved first to engage the engagers at the other location. If you're trying to do both, well, hopefully you have a really slick plan in mind, or have Adar Talon handy. Or you can just run two. And frankly, you should if you've got a fighter wing of any size. Two Hawks will give you flexibility, and that counter will hopefully punish those who try to take them down. The Hawk 290 Ace is Jan Ors, and whoa, is that a good ship. Yeah, 19 points is a bunch, but she makes Rebel squadrons so much better. For that 19 points, she gets one more blue die against squadrons, so that's fairly nice, and two brace tokens. What makes her supreme is that those brace tokens aren't just for her. Jan can spend those braces on squadrons being attacked at distance 1 to 2 of her, and since she's the one spending them, not the squadron being attacked, they can't be locked down by accuracies. I said before that Hawks love escorts, but escorts love Jan Ors. To get braces on your escorts, you normally have to spend a bunch of points on an ace, which feels like a waste when they get ganged up on and 20-ish points go up in smoke. But Jan lets you have an ace for a standard squadron price tag. X-Wings suddenly stay in the fight long enough to wipe out fighter screens with their four blue dice, and YT-1300's 7th health will basically last forever. She's also a great backup to other aces in a pinch. If their braces are about to get discarded or are locked down, she can step in and save the day. Everything I said before about intel ships and positionings holds true for Jan, with the addition that you want to make sure she's always at range 2 or less of as many squadrons as possible. But where Hawks need escorts to keep running, non-ace escorts need Jan for both bracing and intel. If you're running a bomber wing, my advice to you is always have 19 points available to put Jan Ors in your fleet. Add a second HWK in there, sure, but that first one should be Jan Ors. She makes up the 7-point difference in escort longevity. Now we'll finish up those rogues and villains with the Skurg H6. The Skurg is the best bomber the Rebels currently have. It has an average speed of 3, a solid 6 hull, 2 blue dice to throw at its squadrons, a great blue and black to hit ships with, and it has grit to pull itself out of bad situations. The problem with it is that at 16 points, those upgrades aren't worth it over a Y-Wing at 10 points. In fact, the only thing those 16 points get you in a Skurg over a Y is the extra blue bomber die and grit. For the cost of 2 Skurgs, you can get 2 Y-Wings and a Hawk 290 for intel. Why would you ever choose a fighter that's just as easy to destroy and costs more points? Well, since Fire When Ready tries to look at the positive, here's a couple of bright sides to the Skurg. First, taking a couple of them with Yavaris, particularly a Yavaris doing hyperspace assault, can be devastating. Getting that 2-die bombing attack with a double tap basically equals the front arc of a raider on each ship, just in smaller chunks that have to be defended separately. That can put a good level of hurt on a ship. Second, grit is one of the most overlooked special rules I've seen. The number of times my Han Solo has blown up one squadron engaging him, and then flown away from the other while my opponent furrows their brow for a moment before saying, "Oh yeah, grit," goes into two hands of counting. Taking a couple of Skurgs lets you fly them a little more spread out than other bombers, since your opponent is either going to forget they have grit and only engage them with one squadron, or really have to work to get both of them locked down. Keep your Skurg separate from the main body of your fighter wing, ideally to either side of it, and they will either break loose without using intel, or tie up a bunch of squadron resources your opponent wasn't wanting to bunch up away from the main dogfight. In either situation, I'd only ever run 2 of them tops. They're just too expensive to go with more. And yes, Jan Ors will do them a lot of favors, just keep them within 2 of her. They don't need intel as much, so she doesn't need to be right next to them. Skurgs might be the best on paper, but they're also really niche, and outside of a few situations, you're going to be better off with that old workhorse, the Y-Wing. The Skurg ace is Nim, and while he's expensive at 21 points, I think he's turned a corner recently and is totally worth it. Statline-wise, he's exactly the same as a generic Skurg, but he drops the heavy disadvantage and gains 2 braces. Dropping heavy gives him a little flexibility on how you can use him, but once again, it's Nim's special ability that costs the big bucks. He rolls a blue-black against ships, just like a normal Skurg, but on a blue crit, he causes the target to discard one of its defense tokens. And it's your choice as to which one. Since crits take effect after defense tokens are spent, this gives you a ton of flexibility on choosing. Do you really want to get rid of that brace they just spent to ward off future uses? Or is that green redirect looking tasty to force them to choose between discarding that spent brace against an incoming ship's barrage later in the turn, or just taking the full amount of damage from that to keep that spent brace around for later turns? Now, before, I didn't think Nim was worth the points for that ability. After all, the blue die only has a 25% chance of rolling that needed crit, so there's other better options for spending that many points. However, in our brave new world of flotillas with Bomber Command Center and Torin Far to get rerolls, I think Nim is in for a resurgence. With both rerolls, your odds of getting that elusive crit go over 50%, and with only one of them, it's just about 43%. Plus, those reroll upgrades work for all the rest of your applicable squadrons as well. So yes, Nim's expensive, and getting a decent shot of his ability going off costs a fair number of additional points. But those add-ons were ones you should be looking at anyway. And may the force be with your opponent if you manage to get a Yavaris double tap off with him using those odds. As for how to use him, Nim's a bomber, plain and simple. Grit only goes so far, and he's expensive, so keep him around intel and escorts to keep him alive and mobile, and make sure he doesn't go past the range of his carriers. He dropped heavy, so in a pinch, he can engage and lock down fighters, but that should only be done in the most dire of circumstances, since he's not going to be shooting anything larger than a standard TIE fighter down during a game. Every turn he's not shooting at his ship, those extra points you spent on him are being wasted. Mark my words, you're going to see more Nims on the table. And if you don't, you should be the one to show your local group the error of their ways. Well, that's it for this super big episode. Next time, it's into Wave 3 and 4 with the flotillas before I cut my celebration about getting all the objectives done short by crying myself to sleep when I realize there's going to be 12 new ones coming down the pipe in about a week. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Hyperspace coordinates plotted, Admiral.
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim, or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated. All rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.